Shavua Tov, ladies and gentlemen. In our series on relationships and halacha, we are embarking upon the third type of relationship. We began by discussing the relationships of kibud av v'em, honoring parents. We then proceeded to discuss relationships between husbands and wives. And now we come to relationships between parents and children. Now you might think we already did that. We spoke about children to parents. No, they're two different things. One is children to the parents, kibud av v'em. This is a completely different thing called parents to children, which we'll call parenting. In discussing this very difficult topic, we are going to be using a very important work called Zriya Ubinyan Bechinuch, the original Hebrew title, or in its more English title, Planting and Building, Raising a Jewish Child. This English edition is a masterpiece. The author of the work is Rabbi Shlomo Valbi, the great Mashkiach of Ber Yaakov. And the truth is, he didn't write the Sefer. All he did was give a number of shiurim to an audience of interested parents in Yerushalayim. And the series was taped. You know, the good old days when everyone was using tape recorders. As a matter of fact, we have a bit of a connection to this, to Rav Shlomo Valbe. He has a Beis HaMusar. And the Beis HaMusar is actually named for someone who was a member of our shul, Jamie Lehman, Zichron Levrach, who passed away at a young age. And his father was a very close friend with Rabbi Valbe, yet from Sweden during World War II, when they both ended up somehow in Sweden.
He was the private Rebbe in the Lehman house.
He was a Rebbe in their house. And therefore he financed the Beis HaMusar. And somehow in that connection, my wife and I received two tapes in the mail on this topic. These tapes were for us a constant source of inspiration, of chizuk, in raising our own children. Cannot tell you exactly what year the tapes came. I'm sure it's a matter of public record when those shirim were given, when the tapes were made. This particular edition, the English edition, is already in 1999. It's 10 years old, and the tape's probably closer to 20 or 30 years old. And I believe that these tapes were reworked first into Hebrew, then into English in this edition, and that's where this work came from. Let us begin by defining terms. Planting and building. Truth is, I think we should really call it a building and planting. You'll see in a minute why I want to change the order around. Valbe begins by describing these two verbs of building and planting in the context of Shmoneh Esrei that we say every single day. In a completely different context, nothing to do with raising children. Every day we speak about the ultimate redemption, we speak about it in two stages. Bonei Yerushalayim. Bonei means, of course, building. And Matzmiach Keren Yeshua. Matzmiach from the Lashon of Tzemach, which means planting. So we find first building and then planting. And what's the difference between building and planting? They sound like they're almost synonymous. After all, when Mashiach comes, they'll be building, they'll be planting. What's the connection between the two? How do they differ? So, construction is a manual process. You build a building. Let's take the building we're in right now. Young Israel of Riverdale. It's a building. Bricks. See, there are bricks right behind you. There are many bricks. Look at those bricks behind you. Every brick is put in exactly the right place. Look how they're exactly in a straight line. And there's so many bricks in a line. And they alternate. Half is on this one, half is this one. You know, you see how the bricks go? Half a brick on top of the other brick. This is the way it is. It's very determined. It's very rigid. It's very rigorous. It's very precise. There is no way that a contractor, a builder of a building could decide, well, I want to do it differently. I want to improvise. I want to put my own personal impress on this building. So I'm going to do, change the way the bricks are placed. Chas v'shalom, if the person who built the building did that so many years ago, it would be dangerous to be sitting here right now. It would be dangerous when you stray from the original architect's plans, which are very precise and rigorous. Chas v'shalom, the building can collapse. There has to be precise building. That's the first step, it's called building. Planting is a completely different thing. You put a seed in the ground, you plant the tree, and the tree proceeds to sprout. But as you know, no two trees sprout exactly the same way. Each tree, you know, the branch wants to go this way, the branch wants to go that way. We don't box trees into particular molds. So although building and planting are very synonymous, but there's significant differences between them. One is building and one is planting. And the truth is, we require both. Quote, we require both. Rav Volbe proceeds, as the Baal Musa that he is, to begin with the very first word of the Mesilas Yesharim. Talks about Yesod HaChasidus V'Shoresh Avodah Timima. Yesod, the foundation, relates to building. Every building has a foundation. When they built this building, they put in a foundation. They build a bigger building, it's even a deeper foundation. That's Yesod. But Shoresh, which is the root, has to do with sprouting, with planting. We require both. Indeed, when we speak about chinuch, about raising children, we also have to take into account both of these stages. Building means that we have to establish certain rules and regulations in raising our children. And the same way that an architect has his papers, his drawings, and you have to follow those drawings and those rules and regulations. You have to build here and not there, and this way and not that way. So too, in terms of raising children, we have to have what's called building. However, building is only a first step. The primary role that parents play in the education and raising of their children is to enable their child to grow on his or her own. That's what we call planting. Planting. Now, when it comes to planting especially, timing is everything. You have to plant certain fruits and certain vegetables at a certain time. If you plant too early or too late, it's not going to go. The same is true of chinuch habanim, of raising children. And let's pick up, you have in front of you, page 18. The sentence begins, the previous page. If you want something particular to sprout, we must be careful to plant precisely what we want. If you want an orange, you need oranges, etc. And afterward, the seeds will sprout from themselves in a natural process. On the other hand, there is construction. We must build a mensch. It is impossible to depend upon sprouting alone. Now, I want to read the next two paragraphs and then explain to you what I feel are paradigms of each of the two problems which Rav Volbe, Zichrono Livracha, is pointing out. Building without planting or planting without building. They're both disastrous. If I build a child and help him acquire malos, which means certain advantages, but I don't relate to his koach hatzmicha, innate growth potential, you're building your child, another child, just building them in the same exact way, like you build 10 buildings exactly the same way, then his koach hatzmicha, his innate growth potential, will slowly wither, and the child will be a robot. That's a pretty strong word. A robot. He will probably do what he is told, at least initially, but he won't possess any internal vitality. When this child matures, he will continue to do what he must, but he won't possess individual initiative. Since initiative flows from koach atzmicha, innate growth potential, and the koach atzmicha alone go withered away and rotted, all that is left is a human robot. I want to be a little bit more pessimistic than Rabbi Wellman. He says that this robot, as he calls him, will continue to do what he must. I beg to differ. As soon as he gets out from under his parents' thumb, and his parents raised him in a forced manner, you have to do this, this, and the other thing, as soon as he gets out from under their control, he will do whatever he wants. He will rebel. Because he's been put into a straitjacket. As long as he's in a straitjacket, he has no choice, in effect, but to do what his parents tell him to do. But as soon as he gets out of the house, or gets old enough to somehow escape the discipline of his parents, I don't believe he's going to do what he must. Maybe some will. Undoubtedly some will. But some will rebel. Because they were never given their own personality. They were never given what he calls the innate growth potential. So he's been robbed of his own identity. Because he was in effect forced to grow up in a particular way. This is a way to destroy a child's identity. And then later on, he will either do what he must as a good soldier, and there are good soldiers who go through life this way, or, what he doesn't mention in this paragraph, the possibility that he'll completely rebel because he's no longer under the control of the parents. This sounds like a completely theoretical possibility, but I believe that historically, such an educational method existed. It existed, let's go back historically, we'll say it existed in the late 19th century. It existed certainly in England, what we call them the Victorian era, and one need only read some of the literature of that era. Charles Dickens, I don't ever hear that name. A prolific writer, he's paid by the page, he was very, very prolific. But if you read his books, you read an incredible, for us incredible, way of the way children were brought up. You read Oliver Twist and things of along these lines. This paragraph, that's it. They're brought up as robots, do this, do this, do this, do this, do this. And as soon as they were able to get out, they did. In this side of the Atlantic, there was a somewhat comparable type of raising children. And I refer you to another famous author who we know as Mark Twain. If you ever read Tom Sawyer or Huckleberry Finn, ever read those books? I read them. Ooh, vicious. You one step out of line, I think it's called the switch. Huh? Switch. I mean, it's mind-boggling. But that, you know, the literature of the day is simply describing what was going on. They didn't make it up. There was a tremendous amount of corporal punishment and incredibly strict discipline. And, you know, they were snuffing out the individuality of every person. This is what went on in those times. So, although Rabbi Avol just puts it in a theoretical construct, I believe it really existed historically. Let's now go to the next paragraph. If we allow a child to sprout and grow without building him, the result is a wild man. Wild man. He doesn't elaborate. Just one word. One paragraph. One sentence. A wild man. What does it mean, a wild man? A wild man is someone that we don't build him. What do you mean we don't build him? It means we don't train him. We don't discipline him. We let the child grow any way he or she wants. This is, in a certain sense, even a bigger disaster. Because in the first paragraph, in Rabbi Volba's version, he will continue to do what he must. Even in my version, that there's some who rebel, but there's some who continue to do the right thing. However, a wild man is someone who does whatever he wants. And such a man could be a total disaster. From a religious perspective, certainly. But even from a secular perspective, the person just lacks discipline. because he was never disciplined. And someone who was never given any lines, right, like an architect, which was a line. You can build till there. You build 5 feet further and either the house will collapse or the government will say you went past the line and they'll make you take it down. It's a disaster. There are certain lines that have to be maintained. If there are no lines, it could be a total disaster. Let's just reiterate. If we build a child that related to his koach atzmicha, we turn him into a robot. Chinuch consists of both the koach atzmicha and the action of building. That is, we must build a child while cultivating his spiritual potentials. So, such a fascinating presentation. But it's so true. It's absolutely true. And the fact that many have erred and have, in fact, made chinuch a one-dimensional type of process in either direction doesn't mean that either direction is correct. What is the existence of this child to sprout and grow without building him? Where is that? That's in America today. That's in America today. Some call it positive parenting, which means for those who study the work works carefully, you can never say the word no. The word no is taken out of the vocabulary. You don't say no, because no, according to certain individuals, is hurtful and harmful and it limits a child. Always have to say yes. Even when you say no, you couch it in terms of yes. And there are all kinds of ways how to do it. And there's certain wisdom in this theory, but it's taken often to an extreme. If one just looks how children are brought up in America today, by and large, they're left to run wild. The parents have lost control of their children. Generally speaking, by what we'll call a process of abdication. They've abdicated their responsibility to build their children. They believe that the Victorian era was horrific, and I share their sentiment, but they've taken it to the other extreme. It's like anything, any pendulum that swings. There, they were much too strict, and they had too much discipline, and kids were boxed in. They weren't able to develop their own personalities. Today, everything goes. Do what you want, and therefore the child will just do what he wants. Now, this is not to be taken in a vacuum. It's important to understand that child-rearing theories are to be comprehended and to be understood in the context of the general theory that exists in the world at that point in time. In other words, in late 19th century, we're called Western society, whether it be England or America, there were particularly strong values. There were called family values. There were strong religious values. There were values of societal values. You had to do the right thing. And therefore, it's not surprising that in raising a child, you had to make sure the child did the right thing. And if it stepped out of bounds, you let him have it. Today, we live in a world which is sometimes called a world that believes in postmodernism, a postmodern world. Now, what does it mean, a postmodern world? We're not against modernism. We have a very modern world. But postmodern means that we've reached a situation in which we're no longer judgmental. We do not establish values as being the true values. After all, how do we know that these values are true? Maybe there are other values as well. And if there is a complete multiplicity of values without enshrining certain values as being correct, that means there are, I'm sorry to say, no values. If you can do whatever you want and you subscribe to any type of lifestyle, then no lifestyle is advocated. You just do whatever you want. Or they say in America today, if it feels good, do it. Or, as others would have it, don't be judgmental. You can't judge me. I'm doing what I want. You can do what you want. I can do what I want. I won't hurt you. You won't hurt me. Don't impose your value system upon me. That's what's happening in the world around us in general. And if it's that way in general, it reflects itself in the educational theory. Let children do what they want. And that's all. And unfortunately, Rav Volbe predicts the result is a wild man. And there's so many children now acting out because they were never disciplined. They were never given any guidelines. Children need to be built, not just to be planted. Building means, as an architect with specific guidelines, you can't do this, you can't do this, no, no, and no. The word no has to be reintroduced into the vocabulary of child rearing. We're not discussing now corporal punishment. That's not a topic for today. And for your information, Rabbi Volbi is the most vocal opponent of corporal punishment in the Torah world. The most. We're not discussing that today. We're talking about discipline in this larger and broader sense, in contrast to letting a child run amok. Before continuing Rabbi Volba's exposition, I'd like to share a word of my own. We're now in the parsha already, next week's parsha, the parsha of Bo, and in the very last section of Parsha's Bo, we read a five-word phrase, which I'd like to elaborate upon briefly. The five-word phrase is famous. It's found in Sidurim, and it goes as follows. V'gadata lebincha b'yom ahu lemor. Literally, and you will teach your child on that day, means Pesach night, lemor saying. My focus in this brief analysis is the two verb forms, the first and the last word of this five-word phrase. The first word is v'gadata, and the second word is lemor. Now, those who are careful and study the nuances of the Hebrew language know that although these two words seem to be synonymous, Hagoda and Amira both mean saying or speaking, that's not quite the case. In Hebrew, nothing is really, really synonymous. There are always nuances between them. But here it's quite explicit, because many of us are familiar with the Rashi, who comments in Parshas Yisro, we've done in a few weeks hence, where the famous Pasuk says, Kosomar leves Yaakov v'sage levnei Yisrael. And the Rashi comments from the rabbis, again, it's in the context of Matan Torah, the giving of the law. This is the way Amira, the Beis Yaakov, these are the women. That's the expression of the Beis Yaakov movement for women, because Beis Yaakov refers to the women. And when we speak to the women, Hashem says, Moshe Rabbeinu, use the word Kosomar, which means Amira, Amira Raka, soft language. You speak to women, you speak to them softly. V'saged l'bnei Yisrael, the next phrase goes in the Chumash. This is b'nei Yisrael, the men. And saged, says Rashi, is harsh words. Dvarim koshim kigidim. Very harsh words. Because men need to be spoken to in a different way. Okay, this is what Rashi quotes from the Chazal. But this being the case, the phrase in this coming week's parasha, in Parashas Bo, v'gata l'bincha b'yom ahu lemor, seems to be internally contradictory. It starts by saying vihigadata, which means, in a sense, harsh words. No? And it ends off by saying lemor, which means soft words. So which is it? How do you speak to your child? Do you speak to him strictly, vihigadata, or do you speak to him softly, as in lemor? That's my question. The question itself is hinted to by the Or HaChaim in this coming week's Sedra. But I'd like to give my own original answer, which is as follows. The Torah, in this paradigmatic mitzvah of Haggadah on Seder night, which is the representative of Chinuch in its broader sense, is teaching us a fundamental lesson. I believe it's teaching us the lesson that we just described. Building and planting. When raising children, the first initial part of raising a child must be discipline. If there's no discipline, the child will simply not grow up properly. It won't happen. He'll be, as Rav Volbe called it, a wild man. And therefore, the first initial word that's used in this mitzvah is vihigadata, dvarim koshim kikidin. You must speak to your child in a strict manner. No, you may not do this, you may not do this, because this is out of bounds, and that is out of bounds. And this, you must do this, and you must do this. Now, you can fill in the blanks any way you want. You're not allowed to cross the street. Right? You must brush your teeth. I don't know, you fill in the blanks. But there have to be do's and don'ts that have to be put in. And you have to, there's a certain amount of discipline. And there's certain, there have to be ultimately certain kind of consequences if you don't, if you do cross the street. Or if you don't brush your teeth. A, B, or C. Details to be supplied age-dependent, parent-dependent, child-dependent. I'm talking now globally. That's the initial stage of raising children. And therefore, it's clear that we cannot accept a child who is allowed to sprout without building him, the result in a wild man. So there has to be a vihigad. Caution, you get him. You have some strict and sometimes even harsh words to build him up, to show him exactly what the boundaries are. There must be boundaries. Again, the boundary could be here, here, or here, but it has to be a boundary. However, anybody who thinks that this boundary, that this discipline, is the essence of Jewish education, of raising a child, is completely and totally mistaken. It is only what I like to call the prerequisite. The prerequisite for the main focus of education is this Haggadah, is this discipline, is this building, is the setting of lines and boundaries. But the essence of education is Lamar, is Amira Raka. Lamar means, as we will see, a warm and loving relationship between the parent and the children. That is the essence of Chinuch, the essence of the mitzvah, Pesach night, and all year long. Because we're supposed to exude warmth and love and kindness, and yes, flexibility, individuality to each and every child. This is the essence of education. The Haggadah, the strict discipline, that's merely a prerequisite. That's you build certain boundaries. But once you're within those boundaries, allow the child to grow. You plant. Let the child sprout. And if you have two children, one will sprout this way, one will sprout that way. They're both supposed to brush their teeth. And they're both supposed not to cross the street. But that's where it ends. After that, one wants to do this, one wants to do that. They grow up, each one in his own way. This duality, it's not a contradiction. The two terms are not contradictory, they're complementary. You have to have a little bit of Haggadah and a lot of Amira. Vigadata, that's how you start off. But Lamar, the Haggadah, only enables and facilitates and makes possible the Lamar, the Amira, which is the essence of Jewish education. So I believe that these two terms of Haggadah and Amira parallel Rav Olbe's two terms of Binyan and Smicha, of building and growing and planting. The building is the Haggadah, the strict lines, that's just a prerequisite. The planting is the Amira, is the soft and loving language which parents are supposed to use in relating to their children. Now let's go back to this work that we have in front of us. The Mishnah says, when a child is 5, he learns Tanakh, 10 Mishnah, 15 Gemara, why not earlier? So we see Chazal established that a child's growth proceeds in stages. He's 5, he's ripe to learn Tanakh. He's 10, the next page, he can learn Mishnah. 15, he can learn Talmud. Okay? The Chazal established that a child has stages, and the stages proceed according to the child's organic tzmicha, according to the child's natural way of growth. During childhood, the child passes from period to period. You must recognize these periods and relate to them at the appropriate time. It's important to precisely timing our chinuch efforts to match the child's state of development. Sometimes people jump the gun. They try to pressure their children to study something which they're not ready for studying. And they push them to get 100 on the tests, which may produce a proper result to get 100 on the test, but they resent you for the rest of their lives. It's ultimately counterproductive. My personal belief is not to push children. Let the children grow at their own pace. Yes, there are certain red lines you can't cross, I agree. But otherwise, the essence of chinuch is allowing a child to grow at his or her own pace. And here he goes into another series of sources we're going to just gloss over. When he's old enough to speak, you teach him Torah Tziva Lono Moshe and Shema, and you then teach him the Hebrew language. Okay? Do you have page 20 in front of you?
Yeah.
Okay. The rabbis are very powerful. If you teach your children, you and your children will have long days. If you do not, then you'll have short days. Woo! The rabbis are very, if you don't train the child properly, it could have disastrous results. If you don't precisely grab the moment that the child begins to speak and start with Lashon HaKodesh Tov Yitzhil Lenu Moshe, as if we buried him. That's the second line. As if we buried him. I'm not saying, obviously, a powerful, powerful, we shouldn't take this literally. The rabbis often speak it with a measure of hyperbole. But even if you discount a lot, it's still a powerful expression. The rabbis are concerned about the right time. Why is the moment so serious? The beginning of speech is the right time for planting emunah, belief. When we begin to speak in Lashon HaKodesh, this is the planting itself. If the planting is done when the ground is prepared, the planting will be successful. Sprouting begins. If we delay the season, the land is no longer ready. It's an agricultural analogy. Right? Beginning of winter, we plant. You wait till the rain comes, it's already impossible to plant. You put the seeds down too late, the seeds rot on the ground, and nothing will sprout from it. Also, last paragraph on this page, if we act too early, we won't be successful. The land is not yet fertile. You have to grab the right moment. It's very, very, very important. At the right time. The right time. What is chinuch? Chinuch is, as he points out on page 21, chinuch is a beginning. Beginning of a person's or tool's entry into its future profession. Vayorek as chanichov, Rashi quotes over there. Chanoch lenar, chanukas hamizbeach, chanukas habayis. You dedicate a home. Right? So it's something with dedicating a child. That's what chinuch education means in a sense, dedicating. Chanoch lenar. At a certain point, you have to teach him at that time. If you don't teach him as if you buried him, oh boy, it's a little scary. A little scary. All beginnings are significant. The Rosh Hashanah, Rosh Chodesh, we just mentioned this morning, we're having Rosh Chodesh coming tomorrow night. This presents a clear demand on parents in the last paragraph. They must recognize more or less the period the child is passing through this during his maturation. They must match their demands to his ability in every period. Okay, I'm now going to give out the next sheet for those who... Okay, let's see what we have over here. Please, if you don't mind. This is two separate sheets. The same thing. Page 22. If they ask more than the child can do, when the child is not yet sufficiently mature to understand what his parents want from him, this is terribly damaging educationally. This sort of seeding cannot take root. The child cannot develop via something he cannot understand. The child must proceed in stages and pass gradually through the various periods of childhood. He gives examples. This is something interesting. Skip a couple of paragraphs. Something very common. Mothers pride themselves on toilet training their children at an early age. Now, you probably wonder, I'm talking about toilet training here at a shul. It doesn't sound very very proper. No, it's very proper. This is page 22, towards the bottom. The earlier they succeed, in quotations, at training the child, the more pride they feel. It's accepted today, and I concur with this opinion. Rabbi Volbo was a psychologist in a certain way. That if we force a child out of diapers too early, this damages the child's development. This is a rabbi speaking here. A mechanech, a mashkiach, was one of the most famous mashkiachim in all of the world, and he's talking about toilet training, because he understands that this is a good paradigm, a good prototype. The time will come when the child himself will want to be trained, and then the process will proceed far more harmoniously. So you see, it's an example. Another example. There are those who disagree. I see people in this room who disagree. You're allowed to disagree. I'm giving you what Rabbi Volb is saying. We're going to be reading his work. This is going to be our text for tonight. And we're going to hear what he has to say. Others who want to disagree, they have every right. Another example. Often we don't relate sufficiently to the child's play. Because we're adults, we're playing. For the child, play is a serious matter. Rabbi Yisrael Salanta used to say, he was the father of the Muslim movement, when a child plays with a piece of wood in the bath, and he pretends that it is a ship, if we take the piece of wood away from him, He has the same experience an adult would have if a real ship of his sunk. Wow. That's an unbelievable insight. For the child, a piece of wood is like an adult's ship. When an adult interferes in a child's play, he steals something from the child. Wow. I don't think my children ever had, I don't know what they had. I don't remember taking anything away, but I can imagine if you take it away, what's floating in their bath, it's a disaster. But this I can tell you about in my own home, and I believe that it's important, and I want you to listen carefully. Certain errors are widespread and are accepted as norms. For example, people demand that their children sit at the Shabbos table throughout the meal, even though the meal can extend for an hour, 90 minutes, or even longer. A young child can't sit quietly so long. He needs to frolic. This is so true. If we force him to sit through the entire meal, we are compelling him to do something far beyond his ability. And we need not explain how destructive this is. What do we need not explain? He should explain. It is destructive. He just assumes that you get his drift. I'm sure the people in this room would disagree with him. No, the child has to go up at the table, stay from Kiddush until benching. The intention is good. We want to build. This is exactly building, discipline. But for the sake of building, we push the child beyond his ability. And children can't be built with demands that are beyond them. Ultimately, such demands damage a child. The damage is especially serious when the demands are made of young children, since even the smallest interference at that time of planting can produce serious after effects. I have to tell you how we brought up our children. We brought them up only with Siyata D'Shamayim, with Tillim and a lot of... That's the only way. But one thing I can say is, before this book ever was printed, I allowed my children to frolic throughout the Shabbos meal. I never kept them prisoner at the Shabbos table. I never demanded that they say Divrei Torah. You know, in some houses, you say you're everyone gets up there and performs, you know, with everyone perform. We make Kiddush. They all were there because of Kiddush. And they all they had to be there for Kiddush. And they even had to be there for our motzi.
That was beyond their ability, too.
They were there for Kiddush and there for our motzi. After that, I don't know if they happened to stay or the food was good. They'd come in and nash and eat. Some of them wanted to stay at the table. Some of them did say Divrei Torah. Some of them sang Zmiris. And the children of Baruch Hashem enjoyed the Zmiris immensely. But it wasn't in a spirit of forcing them to do what they really didn't want to do. As I say, Baruch Shekivanti. Before the Sefer was even printed, we had this understanding that we don't keep children as prisoners around the Shabbos table when all they want to do is run around. Now, if they wanted to go outside to the street, that we wouldn't allow. Yeah. There was a living room. We had a dining room. We sat at the dining room, and they went to the living room, and Shalom al Yisrael. This is how the children were brought up in the spirit of Rabbi Volbe's advice. And I can only say that this is, I believe, good advice. I believe this is the proper way to raise children. And although I'm sure there are dissenters, and Rabbi Volbe's positions in general engendered significant controversy, true. But I'm an advocate of this way. And this particular paragraph that we just read on page 23, I believe, is particularly important.
Did they get dessert and not eat the meat or the fish or anything else?
That's a good question. Did they get dessert if they didn't eat the meat? No, my wife says. Okay.
There were some limits.
Yes.
I'm just wondering, in terms of the fit up and from the teaching that the bar punished, nowadays most parents don't really have a choice. It's just whatever the school does.
Yeah, you have a choice. What school to send them to?
Depending where you live, you may just have one option.
Listen, you have a choice where to live. The world is always filled with choices. You know,
patterns of individualized right. Fit up, which we don't really have.
Correct. I have to tell you that my children, when I moved to this community, we sent them to Yeshiva Rav Shamshon Rafael Hirsch. And Rav Shamshon Rafael Hirsch Yeshiva was known for its discipline, you know, coming from that type of background. And our children had a lot of that in school. So the balance that we had in the house was let them run around a little bit. But yes, there were certain, I'm not saying that there were no, we had discipline and we told them certain things. But our general approach was to let them, have a little bit, let them run around. We felt that was important. It was very important for their background. That's how we felt. I'll give you this one conversation. I was visiting my sister in Woodmere some time ago, and I went to Daven Mincha down the block, and I was standing at the corner with one of my good friends who spent time with us in Camp Morasha in the summertime, going back 25-30 years ago. Very fine, kept coming back summer after summer. One of the very wonderful then young man, but now he's an accomplished professional. He has a law degree. He gave up the practice to involve himself in chinuch. He's now teaching in a yeshiva. And we're standing by the corner on my sister's block. And one of my children was coming, drove by in the car and waved, and we waved back. And somehow, out of nowhere, this fellow says to me, "Rabbi, I see you were right." And then, what's he driving at? He says like this, "Rabbi, we thought you were crazy. We thought you were crazy. Because the way you let your children run around in the camp setting, you ran around." The particular Charlie he was referring to, he said, "You used to climb up on trees, and so and you didn't give him pets, you didn't hit him. He thought a kid does something so reckless. You have to whip him. You never saw me whipping him for doing these things. So we thought you were crazy. You're not giving the kids enough discipline. But now that we see Baruch Hashem that these children grew up all right, you were right." So. Of course, it's Siyata D'Shmaya. It's not just, but I'm giving you, generally, every child is different, every situation is different, but I believe in Rav Volba's general theory that the more, how should I say it, if it's called building and planting, the more planting and the less building, the better for the child. There has to be building. You have to know your child, you have to know your situation. There have to be limits. But the more you can give a child the opportunity to grow on his own the way he or she wants to grow, the better off you are. Now, in the next paragraph, I'm going to give you the Hebrew because it's ringing in my ears. I'm sure my wife's ears too. We kept hearing this over and over again, and as we kept saying over and over again, I repeated this, I cannot tell you how many times, when the children were growing and we were somewhat exasperated, as all parents are, we have to admit it once in a while. Chinuch is a process which demands a long-term perspective. In Hebrew, chinuch ze l'tvach aroch. Tvach aroch in modern Hebrew means a long-term perspective. And the most important ingredient, the single most important ingredient in raising children is patience. Patience. If you want instant results, you're number one in for a disappointment. And number two, it could cause terrible damage. When you don't get what you want, you're frustrated and you're upset. It's a long-term perspective. When a child is 2 or 3, you have to take into account he'll be 14 or 15, he'll be in a different stage. And look at this. To pass the 14-year-old stage peacefully, the child needs to have a warm bond with his parents. I keep using the word warm. That's the key. If parents are rough 2 or 3 or 4 year olds, they discipline him harshly, hit him, and make demands beyond his ability, they destroy the warm relationship. As I said before, Rabbi Volbi is the strongest opponent of hitting that I know in the Torah world. However, even he sanctions certain hitting. I don't know if it's in the book, I heard it, I mean the tape is almost, I know almost by heart. He allows hitting as what he calls first aid. In Hebrew, Ezra Rishona, first aid. So, the kid crosses the street and the other kid's going to fall. You have to give him a little bit of a whack. You can't do it again. The car's going. It's dangerous. That's first aid. But it's not a way of raising children. You have no alternative sometimes. You have to give a patch. But that's not a means of raising children. Indeed, at such an early stage. I'm sorry. The problem in the relationship won't be obvious. The child still needs his parents. He loves his parents. But later, when the child is 14, the surprise parents come to me, the Mashkiach, crying and exclaim, I don't understand what's happened to my child. He doesn't speak to me at all. He tells me nothing. I have no idea what's going on with him. When the parents come and ask me what to do, I ask them, tell me, did you strike the child when he was 3? More than a decade later. The father responds, of course, how to educate him. Spare the rod, spoil the child. I respond, now you are paying for the blows you gave him back then. Wow. Wow. Amazing. Does that make sense? The spankings and rough treatment ferment in the child's subconscious without even the child's awareness. The memories are hidden within his soul. In adolescence, the effects surface and the parents see that they have destroyed their relationship with their child. For the parents, this is terribly painful. And for the child, it's terribly damaging. Amazing. You have to look far ahead into the future. Early child education must have a long-term perspective. Again, chinuch zeh letvach aroch. Parents must build such a warm relationship with their child that the relationship will survive and assist the child even during the difficult period of adolescence. Again, the word warm. Again, the word lamar. The essence of education is soft, amira raka, warm relationships. Oh, look at this. Sometimes it appears that we get better results with a harsh approach. You know, it's true. I've seen it. The people who brought up their children very strictly, they got better marks on the tests than my kids did. They were better disciplined. They didn't talk at shul. They didn't move. They sat there like this, you know, like robots. So I said, maybe I'm crazy. My kids are running wild. And it's because they're sitting like this. However, the wise man looks ahead. Parents know the secret of chinuch and the importance of long-term perspective are very careful in the early years not just to focus on immediate results. It's very common the child will listen to me. I give him a few slaps and instantly listens. I probably think, ah, I know how to influence my child. However, this is a very premature celebration. Parents will pay for such reactions when the child reaches 14 or 15, and then it will be very difficult to repair the damage. Wow. This is extremely important. Extremely, extremely important. And now, for the final point in this evening's shiur, what's called here, customized education. Clearly, when it comes to building, there's very little room for customized. It's just, you know, you just build the houses in a certain way. When it comes to planting, it's clear that it has to be customized for each and every type of fruit and vegetable, and for each and every child. Parents need to recognize their child's unique character. No two children are alike. If they don't realize this, they're not going to do the right thing. And they quote the famous pasuk, Chanoch lanar al pi darko, in emphasis, his way, his way. And you get again to the agricultural metaphor. It is obvious that a banana plant needs different care than an apple tree. Everyone understands that. Well, if it's planting, so every child is different. The same is true of children. And he quotes the Vilna Gaon on that pasuk in Mishlei, Chanoch lanar al pi darko. This is critical. Educate a child according to his way when he is still a child. Chanoch lanar. The idea here is that a person cannot break his way, his dark. That is, the mazel, parentheses, astrological sign which determines a person's character, he was born into. And now we give to our final sheet for today. On page 26, the Vilna Gaon explains that certain things can't be changed. He quotes the Gaon, skipping to the middle of the indented paragraph. He is born under the astrological sign of Ma'adin, will be a blood spiller. Rav Ashi explained, he may be a bloodletter, a thief, a shochet, or a moel. What does that mean? If he's a tzaddik, he'll be a moel. He'll spill blood for a mitzvah. If he's a beni average, he'll be a shochet. Right? He slaughters meat. It's not really a mitzvah to eat meat, but still, it's okay. So to the bloodletter. Bloodletter is a doctor. A doctor takes blood. That's actually a mitzvah if you do it properly. If, however, he is a rasha, then he will use his madde potential for murder. For murder. Okay? Last line. You cannot change someone fundamentally. You can't. And now the next page, 27. For example, a child whose nature is to be constantly active cannot be transformed into someone who sits and reads 20 hours a day. You want your son to be in a kollel. You know why? Because then you'll be proud. You'll be able to walk the streets and go, my son's in a kollel. Or you may say, my son should be a doctor or a lawyer, whatever it may happen to be. So you can walk the streets proudly. You know, my son the doctor, my son the lawyer, my son the kollel. Because it's not for him. If we force the child to do so, we will damage or lose him. Later the child will go his own way and do whatever he likes, which might be different from what the parents intended. This is what it means. You have to be so, so careful. So, so careful. If you just look at the very last thing, if you force him against his mazel, now he will listen because he fears you. But later when the time arrives for lifting your yoke from his neck, he will turn from what you have taught him, since it was impossible to break one's mazel. I'm not sure if you have the back side. I think I'm sorry I wasn't copied. But let me read it to you from my version. Listen very carefully. Listen very carefully. As I said to you before, he will do what you say when he's under your thumb. When he breaks out from that under your thumb, he'll do what he wants. And he's very likely to rebel. Children like to rebel. Like to do what they want to do. Not necessarily what daddy did or what mommy did. Or what daddy said or what mommy said. And you have to be aware of this. You have to give them this space. Give the child space. He can grow and do what he wants within reason. This is the following story of a famous tzaddik brought his son to the yeshiva. The yeshiva means the yeshiva of Bar Yaakov. He was a mashgiach. He said the boy was shy. You know why? Because the father, who was a big tzaddik, didn't allow his children to leave the house or play, since they must learn. And games are a waste of time. Listen to his words. The boy was consumed with hatred for his father. He hated his father. Because his father wouldn't let him play. Wouldn't let him go, quote, waste his time. The father, being a big tzaddik, wanted the son to learn all day long. That's not natural. That's not normal. He made a terrible mistake in parenting. I didn't succeed, Zavala, the great mashgiach. I didn't succeed in removing this hatred from the boy's heart. When he grew up, he entirely rejected the yoke of heaven. He became no longer observant and married a secular woman. Didn't have an observant household. All this flowed from the very well-intentioned chinuch to make him into a tzaddik. The father didn't take into account the boy's personality, and it led to catastrophic results. Again, chinuch is allow a child to sprout according to his way. If we don't allow him to sprout, the child will be a robot. But not a robot, as he said earlier, who will continue to do the right thing. But a robot, as he himself says, over here, is going to rebel. He's going to rebel. On the other hand, sprouting alone, we don't build, a wild plant will sprout, a wild man. You have to have both. You have to have the duality. To use my own phrase that I said to you before, v'gadata lebincha bayom ahu lemor. You have to have the building. The building is the foundation. There has to be a certain measure of discipline. There are do's and there are don'ts that everyone has to follow. There are lines that cannot be crossed. That's true. But those lines should be Minimal lines. Minimal lines. Within those lines, and we try to make them as broad as we can, we encourage each and every child to grow with his or her own talents and inclinations and desires. We don't make clones, and we don't put people in straitjackets. I know that this was a matter of dispute among the mashkichim of the classical yeshivas in Europe. And my approach, which I believe is Rav Volba's approach, is primarily the Slabodka approach. The Slabodka approach was, you had many great and talented people, and the Alta from Slabodka encouraged each and every one to grow in his own way. And he was extraordinarily critical of another mashgiach, and another Musa yeshiva, who he claimed was trying to make everybody the same. And he accused this mashgiach, that's how it's written up, of placing his talmidim into what he called, forgive the expression, a stoim betel. Who heard of that expression, a stoim betel? I don't know what I'm driving at. In Sdom, there was one size bed. If you were too tall, they cut off your extremities. If you were too short, they pulled you out. He said, this mashgiach wants every student to be exactly the same? A disaster. You have to give each Talmud, each child, an opportunity to improvise on his own, to grow on his own, do what he wants. And differently, we don't believe in clones. This is the essence of Chinuch. This is the introductory shiur into this series. Before we close, I make one formal announcement. It's getting harder and harder to come by 7 o'clock. So we're going to start, Mr. Shem, next week, 7:30. Okay, so 7:30 we'll start next week with the sequel on this topic of parenting. Shavua Tov.
Yeah.
So what's the website?
One second.